For 20 years, Small Business Digest has helped millions of entrepreneurs grow their business. We do this by highlighting ways they can increase profits. Whether these suggestions improve marketing and provide better financial management, offer robust people management ideas, provide speedier logistics, our guests each offer ways of reducing costs, adding sales, widening profits. Herschel Buzz Petticord?
Yes, sir. How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. Good. Are you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Okay. 5 seconds for our engineer. I'm going to ask you a little bit of about your background, a little bit about your company, and then the website, and we'll go from there. Okay?
All right. That sounds terrific.
I'm Don Mazzella. The program is Recalculating That Radio. And our guest today is Herschel Buzz Petticord. He's CEO of In Control. I'm going to call you Buzz because you got it quoted there. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Don. And Buzz is terrific.
Buzz, tell us a little bit about yourself personally before we go any further, then a little bit about your company, and finally a website.
All right. I've been in the medical device business for about 35 years, so you can guess I'm not a teenager anymore. My background education is primarily anatomy and physiology. And this is my third startup company. The other two were sold to much larger companies. And In Control focuses entirely on incontinence. It's not a pleasant subject, but it's a lot bigger subject than I think people realize. I can give you a few numbers. Roughly 60 million women in the United States have to deal with urinary incontinence, and there are two types of urinary incontinence. One is called stress urinary incontinence, which basically is caused by weak pelvic floor muscles. So when somebody coughs, laughs, or sneezes, they put stress on those muscles, and it causes the person to leak. The number one cause of stress urinary incontinence is pregnancy, because over 9 months the pelvic floor muscles get stretched out dramatically, and they're not like rubber bands. They don't just snap back. And the other type of incontinence is called urge incontinence, where a woman suddenly has an immediate urge or need to get to a bathroom. That affects one out of every two women over the age of 50. And then, of course, we have the subject of fecal incontinence. And 24% of women over the age of 40 have fecal incontinence. So it's really a big deal. It's a subject that the women or men, for that matter, want to talk about it. The National Institutes of Health estimate that only one out of three women ever mention it to their doctor because they're embarrassed about it. But it has caused teachers to quit teaching, nurses to quit nursing. Women are afraid to go visit their children for a weekend because they're afraid they'll wet the bed. It causes women to get up multiple times in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. So it's really a quality of life issue. And up to now, you could take medications that 70% of the women who take medications quit within a year because they don't work and they have significant side effects. Surgery, I think right now there are roughly 104,000 lawsuits against the people that manufacture the surgical mesh that is used in the surgery, so that's not real popular. But we've developed a device that has better than 90% chance of ending it permanently. So that's what we do. We focus on incontinence.
All right. And your website?
Well, our website is incontrolmedical.com.
This is radio. Can you spell it out?
INCONTROL Medical, MEDICAL.com.
Well, I feel it's such an important subject. That's why we invited you on this program. And this is a device for women. But I'll ask you a question. Do you have something for men?
Yeah, our new product, which is called Attain, as in Attain Continence, Attain Quality of Life, it does work as well for men. So when that is released by the FDA, which should happen in the next 30 days, we've completed all of the tests, then we'll also, the product will be available for men with urinary incontinence and fecal incontinence.
Well, the reason you're on this program, that's it. But now, can you go through the process by which, you know, people ask me, I have this new product I want to bring to market. It's a medical product. What did you go through to get these products on the market?
Well, we've been in business now for 8 years. And in the past, our products were available only through physicians' offices. Back 3 years ago, we got permission for the FDA to sell our number one selling product is called Apex M. The M stands for mixed urinary incontinence, so both stress and urge incontinence. And we found that because women are embarrassed by this subject, and only a third of them ever tell it to their doctor, that if they can go online and order the product, it's shipped direct to their house in a plain brown box so the postman or the neighbors don't know they have this problem, and they can use it at home, then they're much more inclined to want to do that than buy it at a Walgreens or buy it through a physician. So since we started going direct to the women themselves, we've been very successful.
How did you come to this conclusion? Did you do research? How did you figure out this fact, which to me is fascinating?
Well, it's kind of I'm like most people before I started this. I have a daughter in her 40s, and every now and then I'll give her a tickle or something, and she would say, "Dad, don't tickle me, I'll wet my pants." And I thought she was just kidding. So I had my previous company was a telemedicine company that we sold to a very large medical company. And I went down to Mississippi to visit my parents. And my mother says, "Well, if you're so smart, why don't you come up with something that will keep me from having to get up three times in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom?" So I Googled urinary incontinence, and as an entrepreneur, the size of the market immediately got my attention. And then I spent about 2 years researching what was on the market, what the issues are, what causes the incontinence. And when it really boils down to it, incontinence, whether it's urinary incontinence or fecal incontinence, is a muscle issue. I mentioned already that stress incontinence is weak pelvic floor muscles. The way to solve that is strengthen those muscles. Urge incontinence is more difficult to treat. You've probably heard the term overactive bladder. Well, that's really a misnomer. It's really an overactive detrusor muscle that sits on top of the bladder that normally, when the bladder gets full, a signal is sent to the brain, and the brain tells you, you got to go to the bathroom, so you go find a place to go, and then the brain sends a signal to that detrusor muscle to squeeze and empty the bladder. Simple process. But they're not sure whether it's hormonal changes, but it generally affects women who are entering menopause. that the trucer muscle loses its communication with the brain and just starts squeezing whenever it wants to. So you could be driving in your car, and all of a sudden it squeezes. I mean, you don't have control over your own bladder. So you have to calm that muscle and teach it to relax, which was what the medications are supposed to do, is calm that detrusor muscle. But in the same time, they calm your colon, and you get constipated. So how did you gain? So we developed a product that uses electrical muscle stimulation. The electrodes are on a balloon that is inflated in the vagina or in the rectum, so that the electrodes press very firmly against the motor points of the muscles. One of the signals strengthens pelvic floor muscles. It makes them contract and relax, until they get strong enough that they can use those muscles to clamp down on their urethra and prevent stress urinary incontinence. The other signal, a different algorithm, goes to that detrusor muscle and calms it down so that it's not spasming and squeezing the bladder when it wants to, only when you want it to. So we developed prototypes. We did clinical testing at several major teaching institutions, submitted to the FDA, got our clearance, and our success rate is right around 93% at ending both types of urinary incontinence and fecal incontinence.
We're talking with Buzz Petticord. He's got he's into a fascinating area. We have him here because he identified a problem and found a solution, and worked with the federal health authorities. I've got to ask you the question: How difficult is it to work with the federal health people? People say that they can't go into business because they're so worried about working with the FDA and other people. What have you found in your time?
You know, I've probably in my career sent two dozen products through the FDA, and I can tell you they're actually very diligent, hardworking people. They're not I think some companies look at them as the enemy. I don't. I look at them as free consultants. And they have a set of rules, and there's extensive testing on medical devices. For instance, our new Attain device had to be subjected to 15,000 volts of electricity and not even flinch, just keep on working, which it does. So there's extensive testing to make sure that devices are safe, because it's important that you not hurt patients, obviously. You tend to go out of business if you do that anyway. And I've generally found them to be very reasonable. You follow their rules, you do what they ask you to do, and you get your clearance. Try to shortcut it, they're going to tell you no. It has been unfortunate that while Health and Human Services is funded through, I think, next September, a number of the examiners at the FDA are currently on furlough because of the government shutdown. That doesn't help things any. I've generally found the FDA to be very pleasant to work with, and it just boils down to this. If you want your product approved, you follow their rules. You want to try to change the rules, you won't get it approved.
We're talking with Herschel Buzz Petticord. I want to call you Petticord because I knew Petticord, but Herschel Buzz Petticord. He's got a fascinating product. He's dealing in a subject that he's absolutely right about. We don't like to talk about, which is incontinence. He's got a solution. Your website again for people, Buzz?
InControlMedical.com. We call it In Control because you want to be in control of your bladder or your bowels. And if you think urinary incontinence is uncomfortable, imagine if you had no control over your bowels and you discharged bowel contents without any notice at any time. That takes it to a whole new level.
Well, yeah, I had to deal with Larry Flint, who had that problem. If you remember that that fellow,
yep.
I did an interview with him when he had that problem. And yes, I understand that. It was interesting. When I finished the interview, I was talking with a nationally known surgeon who told me that that is one of the greatest fears of people going into surgery, is that somehow or other that will occur when surgery is in that area. So you got into this area, but Buzz, you sound as if you've really dug into this area. What made you so interested in it that you've been so successful at it?
Well, my previous company, the telemedicine company, really benefited a lot of people, and I got a great deal of pleasure out of making people's lives better. If you can keep somebody out of the hospital and allow them to live at home, that's a positive. And I looked at incontinence as being an opportunity to create something that, if it could solve the problem, really change people's lives. And if you read some of the testimonials we've received, some written and some video testimonials, we've changed people's lives for the better. I mean, my philosophy is, if you can build a product that's successful and build a profitable company, that's great. But if you can do that and improve the quality of people's lives, then that's a real winner. So I did it for my mama, to be honest with you. I'm from the South, and when our mamas want you to do something, you do it.
How true, how true. I'm laughing because you're so right on that one. The obvious question, did it help her?
Absolutely.
Mm. Okay. Well, now you've brought this company to a certain level, but how do you maintain its momentum? And how do you, are you looking at other products? But how do you maintain momentum?
Well, the key is let's put it this way: every month there's $23.4 million spent on advertising for incontinence. The vast majority of that is that sell pads to absorb urine. Of course, they don't fix anything. They just soak up urine. Well, out of that 23.4, I'm the 0.4. So we advertise on TV. We advertise on Facebook and Google search. But we just don't have a huge, huge budget. Someday I hope we have the money to make the product known nationally. I can't tell you how many women call here that have seen the TV commercial and are angry because we weren't advertising her sooner. Well, why haven't I seen your commercial sooner? Well, you know, you have limited resources. I don't have quite the advertising budget that Kimberly Clark or Procter & Gamble have. So with our new product that treats all types of incontinence, and it would be the only FDA-cleared product that treats all types of incontinence for both men and women. It's just a matter of getting exposure to the market. We need to spend more on advertising.
Well, what to you is the best channel of advertising to generate? Television? Is it Facebook? What is it?
Right now, TV is by far. We ask women when they buy our product, how did you hear about us? And at least 70% of those were TV.
You know, just last night I was saying to my wife that TV is becoming an older person's vehicle, a channel for entertainment, while young people seem to be going to all of these social channels. Because if you look on most of the ads, a lot of the ads are really pitched for older audiences.
Well, I would say the majority of our customers, let's say you're a young woman, 27, and you had a baby and you started leaking urine. Most of them think, okay, this is temporary, so I'll buy a panty liner. Well, the problem is it is an insignificant problem when you're leaking 2 or 3, 4 ounces or drops a day. It's not a big deal, but it gets worse. It does not get better. And by the time a woman hits 50, it's really affecting her life, her relationship with her husband or significant other, her job, her grandchildren. I mean, we've had women buy our product so they could pick up their grandchildren, because if they pick up their grandchildren, they wet their pants. And probably 60 or 70% of our clientele are over 50. So the women's TV programs like Hallmark and HGTV and the Food Network, those are very productive for us, because women at that age group tend to go there. The 27-year-old still thinks it's going to get better and she can just buy an inexpensive pad and get by. But it's going to get worse. It doesn't
you know
itself.
You know, you mentioned Hallmark, which is the fastest growing channel on television, and people just totally ignore it. Pure small, but it grows. But what brings us to the question? What are the price points for your products?
The new Attain product that treats both urinary and fecal incontinence in men and women, list price is $4.99. Generally, we give a discount. We also offer no interest monthly payments, so that I want everybody to be able to afford one. But you think $499, well, gee, that's $500. The average woman with urinary incontinence, and this is not my statistics, this National Institutes of Health, spends $900 a year on pads, diapers, dry cleaning to get the pants that you wet cleaned. So for half the cost of what it costs to wear pads, I can make you not need pads again, and you won't leak again, either fecal or urinary. So I don't think it's an unreasonable price. I want every woman to be able to be free from incontinence. That is our corporate goal, is to cure incontinence, period.
Where are you located?
We're located in Brookfield, Wisconsin, about 10 miles west of Milwaukee. And we manufacture everything, every product, right here in the United States.
Well, that's interesting. So some people say, what made you decide to keep it a domestic operation?
Well, I guess you would say I'm a conservative Republican, more of an independent, but pretty conservative, and I would rather give Americans jobs than Chinese or Vietnamese or Mexicans. They're great countries, but we got to support taxpayers in the United States. Our staff, our assembly staff, is all female, most of them in the 30 to 60 range, and they take great pride in what they're building. Our out-of-box failure rate is less than 0.2%. We also guarantee the product. If a woman buys our device and uses it, they have 10 minutes a day, 6 days a week, until they're dry. And then after they are dry, then use it once or twice a week just to maintain the muscle control. If it doesn't work for them and they're not satisfied, at the end of 90 days, they send the device back. We send them 100% of their money back.
It seems like that's why you're on the program, Buzz. I felt you were the right product, the right thing to talk about. To kind of sum up, in your experience, having done three startups, what two or three things would you tell our audience you think are important to be successful in the small business area?
First of all, you got to have a quality product. If you build something that's going to break in 2 or 3 weeks or months, you're not going to be successful. In today's age of social media, if you build a crappy product, you're going to see it on Facebook the next day, because women or men or everybody, they'll get on Facebook or Pinterest and they'll tell people you build a crap product. The other issue is customer service. We have two rules at In Control on customer service. Number one, the customer is always right. Number two, if the customer is wrong, refer to rule number one. You treat customers like you would want to be treated. If they have a complaint, if they have an issue, they have a question, solve it. And solve it with real people. I mean, we have RNs on staff here, so if a woman has a question about using our device, when she calls, she's talking to a registered nurse that is extensively trained on our product. You call our office, somebody, a human being, answers the phone. You don't have to go through a menu of computerized menu or be asked if you know the person's extension. How would you know their extension? You never called them before. So we firm believers in customer service. Our customers are our most valuable asset, and we treat them that way. So build a quality product, give people really good customer service, you'll be successful.
That is great advice. We're talking to Herschel Buzz Petticord. His product, again, is In Motion Medical. Buzz,
In Control Medical, as in control of your bladder, in control of your bowels, In Control Medical.
.com.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. A link to that website will be on recalculating.biz tonight, where you can hear this and every other past and future program. And you can tell us guests you'd like to hear. Herschel, I'm floored by your product and your company, and I want to thank you for what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for taking time. You might can tell we're kind of proud of our company. We like to talk about it.
Well, it seems as if you're doing something for an area that we don't talk about, but I know is important. Thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you, Don, for taking your time. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Buzz, thank you so much. It was great. One, Tony Soprano, the famed fictional crime boss who grew up in the Ironbound section of Newark, New Jersey, turned to a psychologist to resolve some of his conflicted emotions. I grew up in the Ironbound section of Newark at the same time as depicted in the forthcoming movie prequel to the television Soprano saga. In the highly successful television series, Tony Soprano was a man born to the mob, yet questioning his birthright, the rules he lived by, and the people he associated with. Tony Soprano was not alone, and my book, Frankie, If You Get Hurt, I'll Kill You, talks about those changes and the people they affected.
myself included, and the fictional Tony Soprano. The period 1950 to 1965 was the time of major changes, hitting Tony Soprano in fiction and my neighbors in real life. He, like many of my neighbors, felt the strain of an evolving Italian-American heritage. Tony Soprano and my generation were being torn from their roots, rendered from the comfort of their familiar with changing rules and mores. The family, long a center of his life, was unraveling. Recall, his mother, actually, Tony Soprano's mother, actually ordered his liquidation. The mob to which Tony Soprano was born to was morphing in ways he neither understood nor wanted. My book, Frankie, If You Get Hurt, I'll Kill You, explores these changes by leading the reader through the labyrinth of channels swept away for most of us of Tony Soprano's generation. Tony Soprano is fiction. His experiences were not. Return with me to those times where individuals did things differently there and needed to adapt to changes without comprehending the exact nature of those demands. Certainly, Tony Soprano did not quite understand. Neither did I, nor others of our generation. I provide insight in Frankie, If You Get Hurt, I'll Kill You, because my father was for many years the chief launderer of their shirts and the pressing. My mother had a lifetime friendship with their mob boss, and I covered them for the Newark News. The book is Frankie, If You Get Hurt, I'll Kill You, and available soon here and at your favorite bookstore. Hi, this is Don Mazzella. The program is Small Business Digest. And Steve, we're really happy to have you with us, because you brought up one idea that I frankly had not even thought of. But before we do anything else, tell us a little bit about your background and your website.
I'm a tax attorney, and I'm the head of our law firm, Moskowitz LLP. Our website's moskowitzllp.com. I have been in tax for over 30 years. And before I was a tax attorney, I was a CPA. I believe we're as aggressive as they come within the bounds of the law. We do everything in tax, from preparing your tax return to going ahead and defending you with the IRS. And the important part is the tax planning, taking advantage of all the laws. Because, you know, everybody knows when we talk about taxes, there's two parts of tax. One part, the one everybody knows about, is the government comes and squeezes money out of you. But there's another part, too. And the other part is where the government gives us an incentive to go ahead and do certain behavior, because it's good for the economy. So the government can't order us to buy a new machine or a new building. So what do? They give us tax benefits. And sometimes people will get mad and say, hey, you know, look at this company. They're making billions of dollars in profit and they don't pay any taxes. Well, wait a minute. They haven't done anything wrong. The government has given them these incentives. And these incentives will go ahead and provide for the economy, provide jobs, and provide taxes in other ways. The ripple effect, as the economists call it. So the bottom line is, what we should do is take every legal benefit to which we're entitled, no more and no less. And one of them in the new tax law, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, is something, my favorite new code section, 199A, also known as the pass-through entity. So let's explore that. Now, the first thing we take a look at is, what does it do? Well, let's make it real simple. If you otherwise qualify, you pay tax on 80% of your profit instead of 100%. So who in his right mind wouldn't want to go for that deal? If you want to use the fancy terms, it's called QBI, qualified business income, but essentially we can think of it as profit.
Okay.
So
let me just interrupt you there for one second and say this is fascinating, and our audience wants to know about it, but first tell us your website.
Our website is Moskowitz LLP, and our phone number is 888-TAX-DEAL. So you can look at our website, you can call us, whatever you like.
Well, I went to NYU, Steve, but
so did
spell
I.
Out well, a good school. Steve, will you spell out your website for those in the hinterland who didn't go to NYU?
We are happy, even if you're a Columbia Lion or you went to Stanford or you didn't go to school at all, like Billy Gates and some of the wealthiest people in the world, moskowitzllp.com. That's moskowitzllp.com.
Well, thank you, because that's important. Now, go right into it, Steve.
So what happened is the government gave us this wonderful incentive where you only pay tax on 80% of your profit instead of 100%. But, of course, what the government giveth, they taketh away, and there's all kinds of limitations. For the first time in American history, it makes a difference what you do for a living. If you're in what's called a specified trader business, that's like if you're a doctor, lawyer, accountant, or some other occupations, you're subject to more stringent rules. And there's also some magic numbers. The magic numbers are $157,500 if you're single and $315,000 if you're married. So regardless of whether you're in a specified trade or business or not, if you make under that, you don't have to worry about it. So taking its simplest situation, suppose you're a doctor and you make a profit of $100,000 a year. If you qualify under the 199A, you only pay tax on $80,000. But let's say that you make $1 million profit. Well, and let's take it to the max. Let's say you're married, so you get up to $315,000, and they give you another $100,000 of reduced benefit. But $1 million, you get no benefit. So what do tax lawyers do? They say, oh, well, that's too bad, no benefit for you. What's the way around this? And the way around it is, suppose your doctor is an orthopedic surgeon. What he or she would do would be set up a separate entity, say an S-Corp, that would go in the business of selling, I'm going to call them replacement parts, the artificial knees, the artificial hips. That is not a business subject to these special rules, and they'd be subject to the more general rules. So the way that somebody in a specified trade or business gets around it is by setting up a business that is outside that, like supplying the replacement parts here. So let's, and again, I could take up your whole show and a lot more with all kinds of technicalities, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to try to explain general principles. And let's, for the rest of our conversation, assume that you're not in a specified trade or business, but there's still limitations. Now, I'm going to, forgive me, use numbers a little bit, but then I'll have some examples that'll make it clear. Once you go over the magic numbers, today the 315 if you're married, then you get the lesser of 20% of your QBI, qualified business income, but we'll call it profit, or 50% of the W-2 wages, or 25% of the W-2 wages, plus 2.5% of the unadjusted basis, essentially of your depreciable property. So that was just sound like mumbo jumbo, especially over the radio, but I can clean it up with an example. Suppose we have this. We have our businesswoman who's made $1 million in profit. 20% of that is $200,000. So if she'd otherwise qualify, she'd only pay tax on $800,000. Let's assume that she has a sole proprietorship. Whoops, no deduction for her because her W-2 wages were zero. Remember, a sole proprietor cannot pay themselves W-2 wages. So how do we help our person here? Our person becomes an S corp. Now you can pay yourself W-2 wages. So let's go back and have this example. She's made $1 million in profit. So 20% of that is $200,000. As long as she pays herself wages of double that amount, she's fine. So in our example, of her $1 million profit, she pays herself at least wages of $400,000. Now let's do the calculation again. The lesser of 20% of the profit, that's $200,000, or 50% of the W-2 wages, 50% of 400 is 200, so we have the lesser of 200 or 200, which is 200. And in example two, our client here only pays taxes on $800,000 of the $1 million profit. So we can see, what did we learn? What we learned is there's ways around this, whether you're in a specified trade or business. And again, when you're listening to this, if the numbers get you, you know what you can do. If you know what you can do, you can go to somebody who can do it for you. So you say, well, all right, maybe I should become an S corporation so I can pay myself W-2 wages. And I sure like the idea of paying tax on only 80% of my income instead of 100%. Let's take a look at the depreciation. Suppose we have a business that, again, makes a profit of $1 million, but has a depreciable asset of $10 million. 2.5% of that is $250,000. Let's do our formula again. We get the lesser of 20% of our profit, $200,000, or 2.5% of the depreciable asset, $250,000. So once again, we pay tax on just 80% of our income instead of 100%. This is what we're working to. So do we have any questions about this so far?
I have a lot of questions, but believe it or not, I'm following you, and it really makes sense. Bear in mind that 59% of our audience are presidents and/or owners of their small business under 250 employees.
This is perfect, and this law was designed right for you. It's a tremendous benefit. So the bottom line is, with the 199A, the pass through, what we've learned is that if we otherwise qualify, we can go ahead and pay tax on only 80% of our profit instead of 100%. What about real estate? Does real estate qualify for this or not? The answer is yes, if the real estate is a business, and no, if it's an investment. Well, what's the difference between a real estate business and a real estate investment? Well, there's a lot of room to negotiate here. Now, one of them is the number of properties you're managing. If you're managing 1,000 properties, that really looks like you're in the real estate business. But what we'll do is, again, remember, these are brand new laws that haven't been tested yet, and it'll take years until the courts have some really good definitions. So one of the things I'll take a look at is other sections of the law, which determines, are you in the real estate business or not? Now, again, I could do a whole show on that, and that's Internal Revenue Code Section 469 for the real estate professional. But I'll just say there's a laundry list of items where you can say, okay, I qualify to be a real estate professional, and that might be very helpful in doing this. So examples would be, you spend a lot of time with the property, actually the majority of your business time with the property, and you fix the property up, you collect the rent, you talk to the tenants, you look around the neighborhood to see competing properties, what are they offering, what's the prices, keeping the real property in good repair, and we want to try to make this the business. But now, one of the things that you'd asked me to talk about was the aggregation rules. And the reason I started with 199A, the reason you're doing the aggregation rules is to take advantage of the 199A to the max. So in basics, what the aggregation rules tell us are that you can go ahead and combine your businesses and treat them as one. Now, you could, suppose you had 10 businesses. If you wanted to, and if they otherwise qualified, you could go ahead and treat them as one business. Or you could say, well, I'm going to go ahead and treat seven of them separately, and seven of them together, and three I'll treat separately. So we take a look at why would we want to do this? Well, first we'll do some calculations and see if we put all the businesses together, would we benefit or not? Sometimes we would and sometimes we wouldn't. What's an example of where we would benefit? Well, remember what we were talking about before, where to get around the magic numbers, the 157.5 and the 315, that one of the ways around it is by paying ourselves W-2 wages of 50%. So we say, okay, that's the way around. Well, what if you had two businesses, and in one business, and say both businesses made $1 million, but one business didn't have any W-2 wages and didn't have any depreciable property, you get zero benefit here. But let's assume in the other business you did pay W-2 wages. If you combine them, you would have the 20% deduction for both, or only pay tax on 80% of both of them, where if you didn't aggregate, it would only be the one. Now, there's some rules that we have to comply with, so let's talk about them. And there's five basic requirements. The first one is we need the same person or group of people that own 50% or more of each business. So let's keep it simple and assume we have one person that owns multiple businesses. The second one is that the 50% ownership exists for the majority of the year. So again, let's keep it simple, and let's say that our business owner, Sally, owns it all year. Third point is all the businesses have the same tax year end, and most people do. Most people have a calendar year end, but not everybody, and you can change that if you need to. Of course, in four, none of the businesses to be aggregated is a specified service business. That's the one with the doctors and lawyers and accountants. And then we have the fifth test, and we have to look at this really carefully, and we have to satisfy at least two of the three following requirements. One, the businesses provide products or services that are the same or usually offered together. For example, a gas station and a car wash, or maybe a restaurant and a catering business, or maybe somebody that sells clothes and alters them. The second point is the businesses share facilities or a significant centralized business elements like personnel, accounting, etc. This is a real easy one. So most people that own multiple businesses, you know, on an individual level, probably do their accounting and their planning and their centralized business in one location. It would be unlikely that somebody that owned a gas station and a car wash would say, you know, I think I'm going to do my accounting for the car wash in my home, and I'm going to do my accounting for the other business at an office located down the street. So that one is pretty easy. And the third one is the businesses are operated in coordination with or reliance on each other. Now, one there that I'd like to think about, a lot of people own the real estate that they do their business in. That might be very tempting to say, can we combine those? So the bottom line here is we're going to go ahead and net our businesses. Now, in doing that, we say, okay, we want to do the calculations first. And another thing you have to watch out for is because once we make this decision, we are, I don't want to say stuck with it, but we're bound by it for the rest of the time we're in business. Although if we enter a new business, the new business can be added if you want to do that. So that's still something else with the aggregation rule. So the bottom line is before you do something, you need to sit down and do the calculations individually. And you also, suppose you had multiple businesses, you want to do the calculations. Would I be better not doing aggregation at all, doing them all separately? Or would I be better aggregating certain businesses but leaving other ones out. So you need to do the number crunching here. And it's not just this year. You say, well, okay, these are my results this year, but what am I expecting in upcoming years? Although your wiggle room is with a new business that you can add later if you want to, although you don't have to. And also remember, part of the consideration here is our income is high enough that we're over the magic numbers, so that we want to see, can we get more of an advantage on getting through these limitations? Now, you also have to go ahead and attach a statement each year to your federal tax return, or otherwise the government can say, no, you're not entitled to that. So let's take a look at an example. Suppose
Mary
has two businesses.
Steve, let me interrupt you. One minute. Your website again, we're talking with Steve Moskowitz. He's talking some fascinating things. But Steve, your website again?
Our website is Moskowitz LLP. That's MoskowitzLLP.com. Moskowitz LLP. We have a lot of good information on that. And our phone number is 888-TAX-DEAL.
Thank you. I just want our listeners to know, because I was getting seduced listening to you because it's so fascinating. Continue,
who could not
please.
Be seduced by saving taxes? I know it gets me very excited, and everybody loves to save taxes. And this stuff is legal. The government gives it to us. So why in the world wouldn't you do it? And it's a real shame if you don't know about it to pay taxes that you don't have to, because there's some laws that you never heard of.
But, Steve, there are a lot of people out there, a lot of small business owners. I was shocked to discover that in a recent survey, 17% of respondents said that they did their own tax returns in business owners. And I thought that was shocking.
You know, I would put that in the same category as doing my own medical and dental work. It's a bad idea, and the only reason I could think that someone would do it on his own rather than hiring somebody is for cost. And the idea of having a tax professional is that oftentimes the tax savings are many times what the cost would be. So the bottom line is, if you're looking just at the dollars, in most cases, the person has way more dollars by having a tax professional and doing it on its own. And, you know, a lot of these things have all these requirements, and if you don't do them just right, suppose, for example, you're listening to the aggregation, we say, that's great, and I'm going to do that, but you don't do them right, the IRS can take them all away from you. So I'd like to think that it's really worthwhile. And, I mean, you've asked me to talk about aggregation rules today in 199, and I am, but I'll just depart for a second. There's so much else in the tax world that you can do to save you money. For example, we could do a whole show on pensions, where instead of the little pensions that most people are used to when they go in the bank, they can put away hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for themselves or even more with these pension plans, and you don't even have to do it in the tax year like all other expenses. You can go ahead and do it in the following year up to the time of the filing the return, including extension, which essentially put you three quarters into the next year. That's just one of the many, many, many teasers. And again, you know, we've dedicated our professional lives to this. I've been doing this for over 30 years, so you would expect me to know this stuff. I don't know how to do surgery or engineering or anything else that other people do, or running all types of businesses. They've devoted their expertise to it. But in the tax world, remember, there's two purposes to the tax code. The one we all know about, to extract money from us, but the other one is a system of incentives, because the government wants you to do something that's not, and they save you money. But here, this 199A, this pass-through, it is such a gift. I mean, the government just gave you a gift. And when somebody gives you something nice, what do you say?
Thank you.
Wrong. You say more. And that's what the aggregation rules give you. They give you a chance at even more. So, you know, to me, this is a very exciting area.
Steve, can I interrupt you and ask another question? Because we're running out of time, but I really want to ask you. In the newspapers, in the media, it says that that law actually hurt people, and in particular small business. In your opinion, does the new law help or hinder small businesses?
Oh, that's simple. The answer is, as to the law itself, and making it a broader concept, there's winners and losers in this law. But essentially, this is a big, big benefit to business. And again, let's keep it really simple. Would you rather pay tax on 80% of your profit or 100% of your profit? Because that's what this law does. Now, where the law hurts people is certain deductions were taken away, like in states that have a high state income tax, that one hurt. So you could be a wage earner, not have a business, and say, uh-oh, a big deduct for a lot of people, their biggest deduction was their state income taxes. Well, that went away, and a lot of miscellaneous itemized deductions went away for taxpayers, although the standard rate was increased. So if you look at the law itself, the total law, there's winners and losers. But if you look at sections in business, the business, it was Christmas time. The business, the government gave us so much. You know, we're talking about 199A, but we could also do a show on depreciation where the government, for example, with bonus depreciation, upped the bonus depreciation from 50% to 100%. So now there's a lot of property that if it has a useful life of 20 years or less, you can deduct it all in the first year. Time value of money. You'd always rather have a deduction now than over the next 20 years. So the bottom line is, in business, the government gave away the store. If you're an individual and you don't have a business, that's a different story.
But the argument could be made, and again, I ask every expert like yourself this question, and there's almost unanimous that for small business, which this program is about, it really helps people.
Absolutely.
And basically, if you look at the wage earner, while they may have lost on one side, they have gained on the other because of higher deductions, et cetera, and income exclusions, et cetera. So,
you know, I could summarize that by saying if you're a wage earner, you may be helped or hurt by the entirety of the new law because the tax brackets changed. The amount of tax changed, the deductions changed. So if you're a wage earner, you may be better off or worse off. But if you're a business owner, for example, a small business owner, you are much, much better off because you've just asked me to talk about this area, but there's other areas too where business, especially small business, has tremendous advantage. Big business got their break when the corporate tax rate dropped for the big corporations to 21%. That was their big gift. But small business, the big gift was this, the 199A, the pass-through, where you only pay tax on 80% instead of 100%, not to mention increased depreciation and other benefits. So small businesses did tremendously well in this new law.
Steve, we unfortunately have just a few seconds.
I was going to give away such good secrets. Maybe you'll have to invite me back.
Believe me, I want to, and we... after this show, we will talk. But your website again, and how
Moskowitz
people can reach
LLP.
You?
Moskowitz LLP.
And your phone number?
888-TAX-DEAL. That's what we do. We make deals. We make deals. We do tax returns. We do everything in tax.
And you're located in San Francisco?
San Francisco, California, but we have clients literally all over the world because we do international taxes too. So we do taxes literally all over the United States and in foreign countries too.
We've been talking with Steve Moskowitz. A link to his website will be on Small Business Digest tonight. And Steve, we thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure was mine. I had a good time. The only thing is I just ran out of time so quickly because I always have something else to say to save you taxes.
For 20 years, Small Business Digest has helped millions of entrepreneurs grow their business. We do this by highlighting ways they can increase profits. Whether these suggestions improve marketing and provide better financial management, offer robust people management ideas, provide speedier logistics. Our guests each offer ways of reducing costs, adding sales, widening profits.